Welcome back to Idiom America, the podcast that takes a look at idioms, those gems of language, and goes from there. It's been a while, so let's call this Season 2, Episode 1. And gems of language, I like that description for an idiom. Some little bit of rock or other substance that stands out from the rest of it and has some color to it. And that's also stood the test of time and has some history to it as well. And precisely speaking, a gem or gemstone is a piece of mineral crystal, which in cut and polished form is used to make jewelry or other adornments. However, some non-crystal rocks like opal and obsidian, and even some organic materials like amber or pearls can also be considered gems as well, since they're often used for the same purpose. At any rate, the traditional classification of gemstones begins with the distinction between precious and semi-precious. And these days, there are only four precious stones. Diamond, emerald, ruby, and sapphire, and all the rest are semi-precious. And this distinction doesn't necessarily reflect value, more just history, however, as you can get something like a green garnet called sovereignty that's more valuable than an emerald, for example. And it has this really intense and transparent green. And one might even call sovereignty a hidden gem, which is the first idiom we'll look at today. But just quick on sovereignty first. This one was only recently discovered, extremely recently, if we're talking on a geologic time scale, which we are, I suppose. It was first discovered in 1967 by a British gem prospector and geologist named Campbell Bridges in Tanzania and then across the border in Kenya, which is how it got its name, after Tsavo National Park in that area, home to elephants, black rhinos, lions, hippos. And it's since only been found in four places, one of which is Antarctica, believe it or not. And there's an interesting story here, as Bridges was eventually murdered there in Kenya, allegedly over a dispute about gem mining. But back to the idiom hidden gem. And this one's meaning is pretty transparent, something that has an exceptional or underappreciated quality that is not especially popular or widely known. This one seems to get used and frankly overused a lot these days, particularly with respect to some work of art or some lesser known travel destination that's touted by some travel blog. And trying to mine the origin of this one, I took a look again at Google's Ingram, and it seems to first appear in the 1700s, but I'm sure that that's probably just reflective of the limitations of Google Ingram and written records, because I'm pretty sure this one has been around for as long as there have been people seeking out hidden treasure in the ground. And case in point is that one early use of this one that I could find was in 1743 in the Gentleman's Magazine, where they had a poetical paraphrasing of the third chapter of the book of Job from the Bible, for some reason. So there in that poetical paraphrasing we have in reference to God making man, "Why didst thou make him but to breathe in pain? For death he fills as those who deep in earth dig for the hidden gem. For death, to thee he lifts his wretched voice, but ah, still mocked, deluded still, he drags his being on, and death relentless leaves him still to woe." And that's pretty dark stuff. Death is a hidden gem to dig deep for. At any rate, in the Bible, at least in the King James Version, it's not about hidden gems, but hidden treasures. And there in the book of Job itself, it says, "Which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than hid treasures." And that concept of hidden treasures has had to have been around forever, really. Most scholars agree the book of Job was written around the 6th century before the Common Era, for example. And there are a lot of similar variations here on hidden gem, all meaning about the same thing. Real gem, rare gem, absolute gem, undiscovered gem, little gem, precious gem, etc. And you also hear this one often with respect to people, like, "He's a real gem." Usually referring to someone who might seem a little rough on the outside, but has some great qualities on the inside. And it's also sometimes structured as a gem of, like a gem of a person or gem of an idea. Besides being used as a modifier of their colors, think ruby red, emerald green, or sapphire blue, I can't think of any idioms involving three of the precious gems. But there are a few that come to mind for the fourth one, the diamonds. And the first one is one that's kind of similar in connotation to calling someone a hidden gem, and that's diamond in the rough, which is often used to connote someone who's basically a good person, a good-hearted person who might lack some refinement and finesse, just like an unpolished diamond that has the potential to be a fine gemstone. And this one probably goes back as far as diamonds being recognized and mined, and which in India at least has been for a few thousand years. But the first use that the internet all seems to point to for this one is from a 1624 play called A Wife for a Month, in which the author John Fletcher writes, "She is very honest and will be as hard to cut as a rough diamond." And talking about cutting diamonds leads to a couple more idioms. There's a cut above or a cut above the rest, meaning to be better in quality than others. And it's possible that this refers to the relative value of different ways in which gemstones are faceted and where cuts that show a gemstone's brilliance or fire better or more valued than others. But this could also refer to other things like fashion, as in the cut of one's clothes or hair. So I think this needs some further investigation. And in fact, there's all sorts of idioms involving cut that are coming to mind now, like, "I like the cut of your jib," or "that just doesn't cut the mustard." But I don't want to stray too far from gem idioms, so I think I'll do an episode here soon with these cutting idioms. But before we move on from diamonds, one interesting etymological aside here is that diamond came from the early 14th century old French word diamant, which in turn is from the Middle Latin word diamantum, which comes from an even older Latin word adamantum, which means the hardest metal. And the word adamant comes from this same Latin word. So next time you talk about somebody being adamant about something, you can think of them being as firm or hard as a diamond about it. The gem that has lent itself to the most idiomatic language has got to be the pearl. And the first idiom that comes to mind is, "The world is your oyster," which is often used in reference to young people about to embark on adult life, people on the cusp of success as they enter the broader world. And like so many of the idioms we looked at in season one of this podcast, this one too comes from Shakespeare, this time the comedy The Merry Wives of Windsor, in which we have Falstaff telling Pistol, "I will not lend thee a penny," and Pistol responding, "Why, then the world's mine oyster, which I with sword will open." So a little bit more violent connotation originally than what this one's evolved into now, with this idea that if you don't get what you want through ordinary means, you'll use the sword to pry open the oyster and get your treasure that way. And that actually makes a little more sense, I think, than this idea we now have about the world being ripe for the taking for a young college graduate, hence the world is their oyster. It's kind of a strange idiom for that, because oysters are actually kind of difficult to pry open, and you have to use some violence to make it happen. And not only that, but pearls are not all that common in oysters, so maybe there's a touch of wry humor or sarcasm when telling some youngster that the world's their oyster. In reality, you have to gather and kill many hundreds or thousands of oysters to find any pearl at all, so maybe their chances at fortune are not so great. And the rarity of natural or wild pearls led to them being highly valued. You can find cases of hundreds of thousands of dollars for a matched strand of natural pearls. And for a long time, the only way to get pearls was to find them in the wild. But most pearls nowadays are called cultured pearls, and they come from pearl farms, where the farmers implant a tiny piece of mantle tissue from a donor shell into a recipient shell, which causes a pearl sac to form, into which the tissue precipitates calcium carbonate. And this cultured pearl industry didn't really arise until the 20th century with some new technology. And this apparently caused a bit of a crisis in the pearl industry, as it's pretty hard to tell a wild pearl apart from a cultured pearl, which now make up 99% of the pearls on the market. And interestingly, any mollusk can make pearls, or at least pearl-like calcareous accretions, and that includes squids and octopuses. Although a lot of these pearls are more just kind of dull pebbles that lack the iridescent shine that comes from the nacre that mollusks like oysters, abalone, and mussels use to coat their shells, or the little pieces of sand or silt that serve as the base layer for pearls. But an octopus pearl, that seems like something that could be an idiom, one that would mean to waste somebody's talents on something menial or trivial, something that even an oyster could do, when the talents could be put to much better use. As anyone who's watched nature documentaries recently knows, octopuses are pretty amazing and super intelligent, so we don't need them to produce second-rate pearls for us. At any rate, to continue just quickly with some pearl facts, pearls can also come from clams. In fact, the largest pearl ever found came from a giant clam, and that was one that was discovered by a Filipino fisherman in 2006 that weighed in at nearly 75 pounds, measured over 2 feet long, and had a value estimated at $100 million. And the fisherman took it home and kept it under his bed for several years as a good luck charm. So $100 million, that was definitely a pearl of great price. And this idiom, pearl of great price, refers to anything that is of immense and lasting value or importance. It's a bit archaic, perhaps, but you'll sometimes hear it in a context like how your child's creativity is a pearl of great price that you should do everything to encourage and nourish. And this one comes from the parable of the pearl in the Gospel of Matthew in the Bible, where it reads, "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it." And this parable is generally interpreted as illustrating the great value of the kingdom of heaven. And it's worth noting here as well that the Pearl of Great Price is the title of a selection of Mormon writings, one of the standard works of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and some other LDS denominations, which is how I was most familiar with the term growing up. And the Bible seems to really like using pearls as a metaphor, probably because pearls were one of the most valuable gems back then, more so than today with the advent of cultured pearls. So we get from the Bible an idiom like, "Don't cast your pearls before swine," meaning, of course, don't give or show something valuable to people who won't or can't appreciate it. So Matthew chapter 7, verse 6, we get, "Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you." And I still remember reading one of those illustrated Bible books as a kid and looking at this picture of a broken string of pristine pearls being trampled into the mud by some pigs and feeling kind of sad about it. It's a nice image, I think. And another one that's probably from the Bible is pearls of wisdom, referring to wise advice or concise pieces of sagacity. And this one's often used ironically to refer to statements that are kind of obvious, unhelpful, or boring, as in, "Yeah, I'm really grateful for all the pearls of wisdom that fall from his lips." But in the book of Job, again, when talking about wisdom, we hear that it can't be gotten for gold, silver, the precious onyx, the sapphire, "And no mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. Even the topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it." Job 28:18. And then finally, there's one of my favorite idioms, and that's to clutch one's pearls, which has the image of some genteel woman clutching her pearl necklace in shock at something that might have once been salacious or scandalous, but is now pretty commonplace and unremarkable. And you see it happen in old movies a lot, along with, you know, a lot of hand-wringing and, "Well, I never," and "Oh, my stars." I think here of some conservative woman from upper-class society, Barbara Bush, maybe, or some other sheltered, privileged woman who clutches her pearls in horror at the slightest impropriety. So there's kind of a classist and maybe even sexist bent to this one, but I just like that word clutch and the way it just conveys this desperate clenching, that grip onto one's pearls, one's wealth, privilege, treasure, in response to some little jostle from less genteel society. But anyway, you can also see pearl clutching applied to the media's reactions to some perceived violation of propriety or society's rules. You can see somebody dismissing a hand-wringing New York Times editorial is just the old gray lady clutching her pearls again, for example. Well, that's about as it is as far as gem idioms go. There's not as many as I would have thought there'd be, to be honest. But I can't end a gem idiom episode without a shout out to the gem state, Idaho. And I actually have a bumper sticker on my car with that on it, Idaho, the gem state, with some really pretty mountains, which is only the second bumper sticker I've had, with the first one being one I put on in 2003 that declared that I'm pro-accordion and I vote. And there's some debate about where that nickname for Idaho, the gem state, comes from, just like there's a lot of debate about where the name Idaho itself comes from. According to one story that attempts to explain both in one blow, Idaho is called the gem state due to the meaning behind the name Idaho. Supposedly, in 1860, a mining lobbyist known as George M. Willing proposed this name to Congress as a name for a new territory. And in the mid to late 1800s, Indian names were popular, and so Mr. Willing told Congress that Idaho was a Shoshone Indian word that translated to gem of the mountain. And it was eventually discovered that Mr. Willing had made the name up, since it was not actually a Shoshone word or any other Indian word. But there are equally plausible stories out there, both about the origin of Idaho and why it's called the gem state. It does actually have a lot of gemstones, so who knows. One thing's for certain, though, Idaho really is a hidden gem of a state. It's really beautiful and kind of underappreciated. Anyway, thanks for listening to this new season. and stay tuned for another episode soon about idioms involving cutting.